It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, and so long story short, my screenplay is going to be the reboot of Twilight. Anyway, so how's your 3 weeks been? Okay, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that's basically porn for asexuals, and I refuse to explain that any better. Take that as you will. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. This is episode 184.
Is it?
Yep.
All right, then.
Sure is.
So, hi. Didn't you used to be shorter and have a beard? No, sorry, that's Peter Dinklage.
Oh.
I mix you two up sometimes.
Yeah, well, yeah, I get that a lot.
Yeah. For those of you who are just joining us, we haven't seen each other in 3 weeks.
Nope.
So suck on that. But basically the way this works is we have a hat that is magical. It has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Cool people, and you, email the hat, well, email that address, and the hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat. We, its erstwhile human appendages, draw those out at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored. Do that for about an hour. That's the show.
Yep, that's the show.
And
welcome to it.
Yes. And yeah, we haven't been doing this in 3 weeks. Some of you may have noticed that the episodes did not stop. That's because we plan ahead.
Yeah.
Occasionally. So, William, how have your 3 weeks been?
Well, 3 weeks is a long time.
It is a long time.
But, you know, as often is the case, when we've been apart for an extended period of time, you often have a lot more to talk about than I do. And in any case, a lot more interesting things to talk about. Or even if they're not more interesting, you talk about them in a more interesting way. So it's probably best for our listeners if you just go ahead and talk about what you did for 3 weeks. Cause
well, I feel like a lot of stuff I did actually matches up with stuff that you did, though.
I can think of one thing maybe that did, but I can't think
of
any.
Well, no, and the others that you did before. And anyway, well, I have now officially lost 12 pounds.
Wow.
That would be more exciting, except 2 weeks ago I had officially lost 12 pounds. And then a week later I gained 2 pounds. And then a week after that, I lost 2 again.
Okay. Well.
So, but I'm at 380 pounds. Which is the lowest I have been in a very, very long time. Tied for the lowest, though, because when I first got the diabetes and was eating better, that's where I reached. You know, that first quarter where I lost all that weight?
Mm-hmm.
That's where I reached there. So anything below this will be, like, new territory. And I am noticing a change, because I think, honestly, I probably have lost more fat than that, because I'm building muscles.
Sure, because and, you're working out every...
Yes, and I am actually... People are noticing a little bit of difference, and the real way I'm noticing is really shitty, actually. Because I'm a human being, and I'm a human being who's almost 40, and there's little issues like skin elasticity.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm losing weight, and what that means is I've got more just floppy folds of skin. And, like, my belly is a little smaller, it also hangs a little lower, and it's really annoying.
Mm.
So I'm hoping, in the long run, I'm still young enough that it'll spring back a little bit. But we'll see what happens there. If not, I guess you just take scrunchies and bind it up behind you or whatever.
I don't know.
Like on The Simpsons. The producer is also losing weight, but sort of, I mean, partially because she's been working out and partially for other reasons. I mean, she's not doing Weight Watchers, but she eats a lot of the same stuff with me. And I was so happy because this week I found out that sushi is incredibly low for Weight Watchers points.
Well, that's not too surprising.
I ate a ton of sushi last night, and it came out with about as many points as I usually would have for dinner. So that was cool. Haven't seen a lot of movies. I saw one movie called Calvary. I think I hadn't seen it last time. I haven't mentioned this, have I?
I don't think so.
Calvary. It's an Irish film that I just saw in the theater recently. It's frequently listed as a dark comedy or a black comedy. I would disagree with this. I would say if you're going to see this movie, do not see it with comedy in your brain. There are some moments that are amusing, but in general, it's a heavy movie that takes some effort to watch. It is now the official third movie ever that the credits started rolling and I just sort of stared at the screen with my mouth open. That being said, I think I recommend it. It is very good. It is, I don't want to give away much because I feel like even early aspects of it are a little spoilery, and I really took a lot from it coming into it having no clue what was going on.
Right.
I will basically say that at its heart, in terms of what happens, it is a week in the life of a priest in a small Irish community. It is Brendan Gleeson is the main guy in it, and it is done by the same guy who did the movie The Guard, which also starred Brendan Gleeson, which I have not seen. It has some great performances. It has a lot of actors I recognize by face. It also has Chris O'Dowd, who I recognize by both face and name. Hence, I said it. It's heavy stuff. I might not have seen it if people had sort of warned me more up front, but I'm glad I did. It was very powerful to me. It was very thought-provoking. It was one of those that spoke a lot of... sparked a lot of conversation in the dinner afterwards, which is always a good sign. And yeah. Not like, oh my God, can you believe... like, because that's the thing. The three movies that have left me speechless now, in addition to this one, the first was American Beauty, which I now realize, going back, is not that good and very problematic in places. But at the time, for the time it was in the world and for the age I was in the world, it was very impactful on me at the time.
Yep, I remember that.
And the other one is Sin City, and it stunned me for completely terrible reasons. So this is the third one. And at the time, I believe, it's been a while now, at the time I said, this is a very good quality film. I'm not sure how I feel about it yet. I've since decided I really liked it. It's also impeccably shot, brilliantly shot, and, of course, gorgeous, because you can't make an Irish film without showing the incredible landscape, because all Irish filmmakers know that's something they have going for them.
Yeah.
So.
Well, in Ireland, anyway.
Yes.
I mean, Irish filmmakers can shoot other places.
That is true, but they try not to, because they know what they have going for
them. Why go somewhere else?
So I would recommend that, but it's not... it's a serious thing. Didn't really see any other movies. Played some video games. Still playing Red Dead Redemption, which I understand your household is also playing.
Finished it, actually.
Finished it already? Wow, that was fast.
Well, I mean...
I have not yet. I've gotten out of Mexico.
We got it shortly after... You know, we talked about it on the podcast, and then, you know, the other adult in the house who's playing it while I watch. I mean, she had a week off there for a while.
Oh, that's true.
Some rainy days there. Yeah. There's no other people in the house anymore besides just us, so lots of evenings been taken up with it, so a lot of opportunities to play it.
What was the end feelings about it?
Well, you know, we talked about this a little bit off the air, is it's got some problems. I mean, if you're a person who is concerned about sexism in media in general, and video games in particular, you're going to run into problems with this game.
And racism.
Yes, and racism, too. Absolutely.
Some of which, in both cases, can be equated to the sort of realism of the time period it's played, and some of which cannot.
Well, I think even taking into account realism of the time period, it's way overplayed.
Exactly. Yes.
I mean, beyond what would be realistic for the time period. And, you know...
For one thing, this will make you hate all Mexicans everywhere.
Well, and another thing
is... If you take it seriously.
What you run into when you have conversations with people about this who want to argue with you about it, you'll say something like, well, what... You know what? You probably could have not had this ubiquitous presence of prostitutes in towns and around saloons, and nobody would play the game and go, gosh, there weren't any prostitutes in this game.
Yeah.
And so why not do that? Well, because it's historically accurate, you know, you've got to be realistic. Okay. Well, how about the fact that cougars are hunting in packs, and cougars don't hunt. Oh, it's fantasy. You don't have to be that. So,
yeah,
so when it's
your mind.
Yeah, which is it? You know, is it accurate or is it fantasy? And if it's fantasy, whose fantasy is it exactly? And why is it like that? So,
and I even have less issue with some of the portrayal things if it fit with the story. But the problem is the places where they decide to create agency and the places where they decide to take away agency are really arbitrary.
Yeah.
And so we made a character. I mean, they made a character. That's the thing. Yes, you get to be good or bad, but ultimately, most of the story is in cutscenes that you don't control.
Mm-hmm.
And the character they're trying to tell me he is contradicted several times at these key points.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that's not how he'd handle that.
No. But in the game, you can play the character, you know, more or less honorably or not honorably.
But he's in the middle ground regardless of which you do.
That's true. But if you play him honorably, then the way the sexism manifests itself in the game, it's probably not any more dramatic or anything than any other video game you're going to play. And that's sad. I mean, that's really sad that, you know, the other adult in the house is a, you know, female gamer, and she has to basically satisfy herself with this standard of how women are portrayed in video games, or not play games at all, you know, which isn't an option. Especially, here's a game that could just as easily be called a cowboy simulator, you know, if you want.
Yeah.
And if you like that kind of thing like she does, and for her, doesn't matter if it's a third-person game and the character's male, it doesn't matter. I mean, she still likes to play it because it's a cowboy. And frankly, if she could have chosen a female character and dressed it however she wanted, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference from behind anyway, because she wouldn't dress up her female cowgirl character any different than the cowboy character dresses. So for her, it was great, you know, breaking horses, riding horses, you know, all the cool stuff you get to do as a cowboy. She loved all that. And, you know, as far as ignoring the sexist elements, well, she has to do that in a lot of video games anyway.
Yeah.
Which is sad, but it's true. So for the most part, you could ignore all that. But we did hear about things that come up more when you're playing as a dishonored character, or when you just want to do something you don't care about your honor points.
Yeah.
And some of them are really horrible.
Oh yeah.
And
I actually went across one because I got like it was an actual, very seldom does this seem to happen, but it was an actual decision thing. It's like, hit this button for this or that button for that. And the way they worded it, I was confused, and so I hit it, and then I'm like, whoa, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah.
That is not the right.
Yeah, yeah.
But
all of that aside, you know, we enjoyed the game quite a bit. There were a lot of,
the environment is cool. I played it for the story, because I've been told that as opposed to the other Rockstar games and the Grand Theft Auto and stuff, this has an interesting, compelling narrative.
Rocksteady.
No, Rockstar.
Oh, yeah, this is Rockstar. Rocksteady is that other...
The Rhino Mutant from Teenage Mutant
Ninja Man, I always get them mixed up. But yeah, this is Rockstar, that's right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, the Grand Theft Auto people.
Yeah.
And I've been told that this has a really compelling thing. And even as I'm playing, I'm listening to a podcast where somebody's reminiscing about this game. And, oh, how amazing. And I'm like, it's trying to. And there are moments where I'm like, this was really well done, but it's thwarting itself and contradicting itself all over the place. In ways that are really bothersome.
Sure. That being said, though, I thought it was pretty well written and pretty well acted, and the Also, the motion capture was pretty good.
It is. It is pretty good to watch, and it is a lot of it is more complex than a lot of stories. I'm sure it outstrips a lot of other Rockstar game stories, but it just gets me my whole experience in Mexico. I hated. Now I'm just pissed off because bears keep eating me constantly, and because I'm hanging around with a character who is blatantly, stupidly racist, essentially as comedic effect. Like, the whole point is to see how dumb he is, but I have to hang out with him a lot, and I'm getting really tired of it.
Mm.
And also, there are spoilery reasons that it's also closer to my heart and pissing me off that I won't say here because it would be spoilery. But I'm getting close to being done with it.
Well, a lot of the contradictions that I think you're referring to, also, I think some of them are supposed to be challenge. I mean, like, for example, there are a lot of situations that in the game, if you do it, you're rewarded with honor points. Yeah. But you can imagine that if this person were in the actual situation, it would be a lot more ambiguous than that.
Yes. Well, what I love, though, is because I decided to play honorable, but I also am lazy, my honor's been maxed forever.
Yeah.
And the big thing that comes up in a lot of situations is kill or capture.
Yeah.
And killing doesn't lose you honor points because it's usually criminals and shit.
Yeah.
Or it's a gunfight. But capturing gets you honor points. Now my honor's maxed. I just kill everybody because it's faster.
Well, like, late in the game, if you capture, well, or kill, but especially if you capture the person, there are certain ramifications.
I did capture Escuela, and then the next one didn't even have the choice. I didn't even kill the guy. It was all like a cutscene. I take it back. There was a moment when I could have, and I thought I had a chance to capture, so I'm switching to my goddamn lasso, trying to lasso him. The game, literally, the mechanic will not let you.
Oh, yeah,
and
right.
In the meantime, some other dude killed him.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, why was I here?
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, there are political ramifications that, you know, make you stop and go, this didn't feel very good. I mean, this person is a thief. I stopped them, and I didn't kill them. But it somehow doesn't seem honorable because there's a larger political situation there, and you just don't feel good about it. But I think that was supposed to be part of it.
Yeah. You know? Well, and that, it feels sloppy to me. The whole thing feels sloppy.
Really?
And honestly, I'm just getting tired of it.
Because I thought it was pretty well put together.
The narrative feels sloppy to me.
Well, now you have to keep in mind that
the mechanics and the gameplay are awesome.
Well, I think I didn't feel like the narrative felt sloppy at all, but I think part of it is because a lot of the issues that are addressed explicitly in the narrative are things that I've been really worried about and thinking about lately, and in some ways the game was a positive expression of these things I've been very concerned about, and in some ways it was a negative expression. What I mean by that is, you know, on one hand, the portrayal of the West is so often so much more violent and terrible than it really was. You know, I mean, it's terribly overdone. That said, there are certain parts of the country during that time period in the late 19th century and even a little bit the early 20th century where there was, you know, significant crime and violence, particularly mining towns or border towns, yes. Because in this particular era, they must have done their homework on this and knew how things were, because just before this period in American history, Native Americans were raiding Mexico quite a bit for mm-hmm. cattle and horses and things.
I thought the game was conspicuously absent of Native Americans, and then it turned out it just comes up in a later act. At the time, I was like, that's weird. Well, we sort of addressed it, but then they're just not here at all.
Well, because in the early 20th century, it was more about, you know, in the game, it says the Great Plains and whatever. This is supposed to represent more of the Sioux up in the northern plains. Because by this time in American history, like I said earlier, the Native Americans had been raiding Mexico. And now, in the same period of history in the United States, Mexico was kind of striking back. But yeah. The Native Americans were sort of withdrawn by then because of the United States or whatever. So most of the people who were getting the brunt of Mexicans coming into the United States and rustling cattle and stuff were white settlers. So, but I mean, all of that is related to American politics and stuff like that. It has nothing to do with what the West was actually like.
Yeah.
As a whole, if you back away from gold rush towns or boom towns about other mining, you know, minerals or some of that border disputed area, most of the West and most of rural America, for as long as there's been rural America, it's pretty peaceful place. I mean, it's not very violent.
Except for the roving packs of cougars.
And the reason I've been thinking about this lately is because, you know, not long ago I realized how much my rural experience informs a lot of the things I think and believe, mm-hmm. and how it comes up against what other people think and believe in. And they don't understand, well, like, you know, I'm an anarchist. Why am I an anarchist? Well, part of it is because in my experience of growing up in rural America, there's no law out there. You know, you don't have the sheriff driving.
At best, it's severely libertarian.
Well, but it's just your experience. You don't walk out the door and, you know, the sheriff's not driving up and down the road. You know that there's laws, but you don't feel the presence of the law. You know, mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. There's this concept that you can do whatever you want out there. But then, given that, what do rural people do with this notion that I could do anything? What do?
Satanism.
They leave their doors open. They help each other out. A stranger comes up the road and they greet them like they're old friends and they offer them whatever they've got, even if they don't have very much.
Drug them, turn them into human centipede.
No, what I'm saying is this experience in rural America, you know, you see that if you put people in a place where the law essentially does not practically exist, they're not monsters.
Ritual sacrifice so the corn will grow better.
They don't do any of those things at all. They do the exact opposite. In fact, it's a stereotype about...
They sacrifice corn so the people...
No, it's a stereotype about rural America that, well, they leave their doors open, they're friendly, and sometimes the stereotype is taken to the point where they're stupid. I mean, what's a stereotype about Canada? They're all polite or whatever. All of those...
Fucking hate Canadians.
All of those stereotypes about Canadians have been said about people in the West and Midwest before. And these are... This stereotype of being really nice and maybe overly nice and neighborly is in the same context of a people that basically live without the law breathing down their backs all the time, which directly contradicts what most people seem to think is a scientific empirical fact, which is if you don't have the law or government, people are going to be killing each other. It's just not true. And it's been frustrating me lately because... Well, I, you know, for obvious reasons, for reasons I've probably brought up. But, I mean, it goes to other things like, you know, I've said on the podcast that, you know, people need to, when they purchase things, they need to not just think of how much it costs. And people have said, oh, that's not how people work. You know, people are always going to think first about the money that's coming out of their own pocket. They can't be socially conscious. But that's not true. For most of human history, when people trade, I mean, the cost of something, the bottom line price of something out of someone's pocket, that's a recent thing in human history. For most of human history, trading involves all kinds of values and you think about all kinds of things in the trade process. And in rural America, there's still that sense, because my dad remembers when, you know, they would trade eggs for you know, salt and things at the store, and the trading wasn't based on the price of something or a number or a quantity. It was based on, well, do you know this person? Are they your neighbor? Are you related to them? You know, trading with this person versus this person could mean a lot of things that didn't have anything to do with price, or you're going to get more from this person from that person. So I know that human beings can think this way and have thought this way for most of human existence. It's this thinking only about the price coming out of your pocket that's new. But other people think, no, this is how human beings think, and so it's impossible for them to think any other way. And so it's frustrating, you know, for me to come into a discussion with people about how human beings can be, and they answer me by saying, oh no, that's just not how human beings are because of XYZ. Well, that's maybe what they're talking about is how human beings are in specific contexts, but that's not how human beings fundamentally are. They can be like this too. I know that because that's the way they are and have been in rural settings for years. So, you know, it becomes an issue of, you know, political discussions and policy making and things like that about how, well, we have to do this. And this is an argument a lot of people make about certain policy, public policy even. We have to do it this way because human beings are X. But human beings aren't that. So that means you don't have to have policies like that. But how do you win an argument like that when these people are so convinced that this isn't just their, they don't think this is just their opinion about how human beings are. They think it's a fact. When I know for a fact, from my own experience, and also from science, human behavioral science that I know of, that they're wrong. How do you, you know, how do you get through in that situation? But the point to all this is, sorry, I don't mean to be boring you, but the game deals with rural life and government. And
oh, yeah, we were talking about a video game.
Yeah, and government intervention in people's lives. And there's a point where someone says something like, well, I realize that things are bad right now because of cattle rustling and everything, but I would rather deal with this like on our own and locally than have the federal government come in here and do it. And yes, that does express a lot of what rural people think about government and about all this stuff. But, you know, people, there's this, it seems to me it's growing, and maybe it's not growing, maybe it's, that's just my perception, but this growing idea that human beings are stupid, human beings must have government, which isn't true. Human beings don't need government at all. Science proves they don't need it. Now, that doesn't mean they're not better off with government, and you can make an argument that, well, this government's good because of X, Y, or Z, but if when you argue for government, your first point is, well, first of all, we have to accept that humans need government, and then you go from there, well, your argument fails because human beings don't need government. You know, there's this growing sense that human beings have to be taken care of by some larger group, either government or a corporation or something. And I find that really discouraging, a little bit scary, because I don't trust these people that other people say we should trust to run my life or our lives or whatever. And I feel like, I don't know.
Someday I'm going to take one of these rants you go on and I'm going to diagram it. Because it's amazing.
Well,
I guarantee up to two thirds of the way through one of these, you have no idea where you're going either.
Well, the problem is I'm not going anywhere. I'm just talking, you know, I'm just saying whatever's coming up in my head. But I mean, there is a point. The point is all of this stuff.
There's like eight of them.
Well, the main thing that made me start talking about it was these are things I've been thinking about all together, and so this game sort of addressed some of those things. I mean, I know it's just a video game, but I couldn't help thinking about them while the game was sort of unfolding, and thinking about how in the game you've got a way of life that seems to be disappearing and dying. That's kind of the point. It's the early 20th century, and I see that happening now. I see that, you know, the rural way of life is going away, and that worries me, because what people are saying about human beings and human nature is all wrong. I mean, it's demonstrably, empirically wrong. But already they're saying these wrong things about humanity while there's still some rural people proving it wrong. What's it going to be like when there aren't any rural people left? It's just going to be even stronger. Not just rural people, but like nomadic people. We need those people in the world too to show us what humanity's like, so that we don't think that all of humanity is just like whatever people act like in Chicago or New York or, you know, whatever. I mean, nothing against Chicago or New York, but you know what I'm saying.
I learned years ago, mostly after 4 years of doing it in college, anytime anybody says human beings behave like XYZ on some sort of genetic or just species level, that it's bullshit, regardless of what behavior or attitude is.
But
I'm like, no.
But does it seem to you that more and more this is something that's accepted for people to say and to behave like this?
Not at all.
It's just
more the opposite, actually, except insofar as we've become a very diametrically opposed society, and so everybody has to rush to the furthest extreme. So there's lots of people who say it now to retaliate against something. You can't do that because that's not how humans are built.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when they do that, yeah, but no, in general, I don't see that. I kind of see the opposite more.
Really?
Because I think there is more plurality and there's more knowledge about it. This kind of shit happened before, but people didn't necessarily know. You might have a person in the very situation you're talking about. In the little town, you might have the very person or the people who defy the exact point somebody's making, but nobody else outside of that town knew about that. Whereas now, those people have a fucking web page.
Well, yeah, except that people are getting on the web to find more people like them, and they're not really learning about other people. They're just getting more entrenched in their own way of thinking. I mean, don't you? You seem to be more optimistic about
this.
But
I mean, that's a different issue, in my opinion.
Okay.
Whether people are becoming more insular in the type of individual they hang out with, yes. But whether or not that's convincing them that that's how humans are, no. I think the opposite, because they all think they are the persecuted minority.
Hmm. It just seems like we're heading toward a kind of monoculture, though, you know? Like, I don't know. I hope I'm wrong. I mean, I hope I'm just sort of going through this sort of pessimistic
phase. I think you are. I'm not
phase.
In a position to know, but I'm also not sure you'll ever not think that.
I don't know why. I mean, I could have my mind changed about it very easily.
That would be awesome.
In fact, I have been very encouraged in the last few weeks by finding people doing work who are concerned about these very things and trying to, you know, rebuild local communities and stuff. So that was encouraging to know that there's more work out there being done in regard to these things than I thought.
Yeah.
So
I think the percentages. The monoculture gets a bigger and bigger statistical chunk all the time, but the barrier to creating your own culture is so much lower than it used to be. Both in simply a mimetic sense, because of the internet, and in a very real physical sense at this point. People can build intentional communities much easier than they used to be able to, and so I think that's keeping a lot of stuff alive. And will continue to, because the barrier is not suddenly going to go back up unless there's a major political issue that causes it, which, again, is a huge upheaval situation. But, no, and that's the thing they worry about nowadays. Nowadays, people sit down and say, oh, my God, hardly anybody speaks this language anymore. We got to learn it. Whereas if you went back a few decades, people didn't care because that was the old.
Hmm.
But I have no idea. Anyway, so, Cowboy game. Interesting.
Well, you know.
There's a lot of social commentary in the game, and I like that. And I do find that interesting, and the conversations are fascinating. That's the big thing. If you're ever playing Red Dead Redemption, and you're going somewhere with somebody else, and you're both on horseback, don't go too fast, because the conversations you have then are the most fascinating
parts
of the game.
Yeah, there's an option to skip, usually, and
don't
do that.
People frequently give you their philosophy of life and things, and it had one of the most amazing interchanges I've ever heard in a game, where a revolutionary leader is trying to explain how the evil colonel is partially that way because of the evil general that's running everything, and how it's a vicious cycle of abuse. And he says, the line, is like a dad who beats his son, and then his son just goes outside and rapes his dog. Which by itself is not that funny, but it's immediately followed by the protagonist saying, that is a very specific example you just said. And then the guy goes on as though it was nothing.
Well, but the protagonist also talks about how when he's talking to the military down there in Mexico, he talks about how, well, you know, it's like he thinks that... He thinks it's important to give people reasons for why something should happen, because it's like his son. If he just tells his son to do something and doesn't explain why, his son might just do the opposite just to spite him and then, you know, go through all kinds of pain and stuff before he figures out.
Yeah. It's got some amazing narrative elements. I just think it's strung together really weird. And probably in deference to the gameplay.
Well, and it may be so, but I suppose it just resonated with me.
Because of the stuff.
Well, so much because of all this other stuff that I could overlook whatever... Or that I could fill in some blanks myself with my own stuff, you know.
Meanwhile, the producer and I have finished the fourth Dresden Files book. We are currently
pausing
a little bit because if we just go on, we will never fucking play Diablo 3.
Mm.
So the agreement is we're not starting Death Masks until we have played Diablo 3 enough that it will be self-sustaining, that we won't always say, no, let's just read Dresden. And so we are playing Diablo 3, and it's starting to be pretty fun. I'm playing a witch doctor, she's playing a monk, and it's pretty enjoyable, but I do need to give a shout-out to voice actors. Voice actors have a much harder job than we think.
Oh, yeah.
Because last night, the actress, I guess, voicing my character, said the following line. I will bring peace to the goat men, one way or another. And I'm like, I don't care if it took 20 takes for you to say that without busting out laughing. The fact that you could do it, unironically, seriously, you deserve a fucking medal.
Because
that's ridiculous.
There's a film...
And that's my thing from now on. Whenever I go places, I'm telling people I'm bringing peace to the Goatman.
There's a film...
One way or another.
There's a film streaming on Netflix right now called I Know That Voice.
I've heard. I want to see... Well, I knew about it already. I just found out it was on Netflix today.
It's pretty good. I mean, John DiMaggio sort of put it together, you know, him and his friends. And
it's got all the good ones, Billy West and Maurice... whatever.
Lots of good people in there. Mark Hamill talks a little bit in it. Kevin Conroy. Marion Ross is even in it.
I didn't really want to talk about voice actors. I wanted to talk about how ridiculous that line was about the goat men.
I know. I just saw.
And it drives me crazy because Deckard Cain, who, spoiler alert, is back in Diablo 3, and he was old in Diablo 1, so what the hell? Is there Roger Cube, stay a while, and all this shit. And he's talking about evil is coming, and we have prophecies and stuff. And then his niece says, wait, uncle. Could
Jennifer
this have
Hale.
Anything to do with the uprising among the goat men? I actually yelled at the TV, no! Also, what?
Jennifer Hale plays that character.
And he's like, yes, of course. I'm like, don't humor her. First of all, she made that up. Second of all, even if she didn't, there is no connect. Does she just go around town? People are like, I had fish for dinner. Could this have something to do with the uprising among the goat men? Come on. But no, apparently, of course it does. The goat men, all of the evil, yes.
Well, it's more than that. He complimented her on being so insightful to notice that. You know, Hale.
That's how children come up terrible.
Jennifer Hale did the female shepherd in... If you listen, you can kind of tell.
Stepping all over my comedy here, dude. What the fuck is wrong with
but
you?
But the guy who does Deckard, you can tell he's a younger guy impersonating an older guy's voice.
I was going to look that up because I was talking with somebody. They're like, isn't it the same guy? I'm like, if it is, he has phoned it in because he is doing a shitty Deckard Cain.
Yeah, I thought so.
He needs more of that Pepperidge Farm guy in there, you know? He's not doing it anymore.
It sounded like a young guy doing an old guy.
But it's always been a young guy doing an old guy. You just have to commit hard enough.
Yeah.
evil, and my teeth fell out. Deckard Cain sounds ridiculous, and it's very distinctive, goddammit. And it's like Christopher fucking Walken. Anybody can do an impression, except apparently this guy. He can't be bothered.
Okay, so, yeah. It wasn't that bad.
The story,
but it was bad.
The story, well, that's or to put it more accurately, it wasn't bad enough. He sounds way more like a normal dude, and not like Deckard Cain.
Well,
because Diablo 2 Deckard Cain was fucking hilarious.
Was he?
Stay a while.
I don't know anything about.
So the story is stupid as all hell, but the gameplay is
no
being
pun
pretty
intended.
Fun. The gameplay, we're enjoying it. I keep scaring Trish with the zombie dogs.
But who's the guy who plays the jewelry guy? What's his name? He's been in other things, like he was in the Kung Fu Panda.
I don't know that we've encountered the jewelry guy yet, so.
Oh. Never mind.
Although,
does a great job.
The merchant that we normally go to now, for some reason, does not like Trish's character. Every time I show up, he says something nice and simple, and then he says something really bad to her, like, don't touch anything if you're not going to buy it. I'm like, why does he think she's a jerk? I don't know. And we both have weird accents. I don't know what that's about. But yeah, we're kind of enjoying that. And tomorrow night, which speaking of which, I think you and your housemate should come also. Roller derby is tomorrow night.
Yeah, we heard that.
It is an intra-team bout. which means they did this last year too. They just split the team in half and play against each other.
Mm-hmm.
And this has two major impacts, because it's not a real thing. It's a no-frills sort of thing. So one, tickets are just $5 at the door.
Mm.
And two, it's BYO chair.
Really?
Yes. Mm. We got camp chairs, so it's fine. So, doors open at 7:30. You should come. Also, we're all meeting at 30 Hop, which is a restaurant near there, at 6 o'clock. Which the producer and I discovered this last weekend. We went there on Saturday for lunch and liked it so well that we went there again for Monday for lunch. It's kind of a gastropub kind of place. It has a lot of cool-looking craft beers, but I haven't had any of those because the Weight Watchers points are crazy for that.
Mm.
But it has some really tasty food.
Mm.
So we've been pleased about that. So I'm very excited because I haven't been to Derby since, like, February or March. So I'm very excited about that. And I think that's about it. Yeah, I feel like I would have seen more. Oh, actually, I did see one other movie worth mentioning. But only because I didn't like it. This was a middle-of-the-night, want-some-weird-shit movie. I watched The ABCs of Death.
ABCs of Death?
It's a horror movie, although it's frequently listed as a comedy horror movie. And it's an intriguing premise. I like this idea.
Okay.
They decided to contact 26 filmmakers, indie filmmakers, gave them all $5,000, and had them make a short film involving death.
Yeah, I heard of this, actually.
And each one was given a letter of the alphabet, and that had to be the letter that was the title, had to be a word with that letter.
Mm-hmm.
It was very disappointing. Like, I mean, they range all over the place, but out of the 26 films, I would say there were probably 3 or 4 that I thought were genuinely good, and they weren't good enough that I can actually remember specifically 3 or 4. So, yeah, kind of unimpressed. But it is interesting just because it so runs the gamut in terms of production style, in terms of story, in terms of point, in terms of seriousness, in meta terms, like in terms of how much they acknowledge the fact that they're making a film. I mean, there's one that starts off with the two guys sitting around brainstorming what the hell they could make the film about with that particular letter that they got. Like... It's very interesting in that sense. But, yeah, no, it was dumb. But, you know, something to do at 2 a.m. on Saturday.
Yep.
Also, I've been sleeping poorly. But
Yeah, me too.
I've been having difficulty with my workout, but I think I finally got it sort of straightened out. And today I had a very good workout.
Good.
So, building up my muscles. Yeah, is it so had time?
Sure.
Had time.
Watched old Batman serials too. And the only thing I have to say about them is
like oats?
Really corn. Racist.
So many old comic-related things get really...
Man, bad. Like, the one was made in 43. In the very first episode, it talked about the wisdom of the American government in rounding up Japanese people and putting them in internment camps.
Yeah.
So bad. This isn't signed by anyone.
Oh, that means we have to set it on fire. No, wait, that's not right.
I realized tonight... I know what brand of underwear my sister wears. Is that creepy? Why would that be creepy? Why would that be any more creepy than knowing what make of car your sister drives or knowing what pizza place your sister likes to order stuff
from? I believe the brand of underwear is considered, at least in this person's mind, potentially more intimate knowledge than the other thing.
How so? It's clothing. What's the difference between the brand of underwear, the brand of the place they like to shop for, any other kind of article of clothing? I don't understand.
I think it's the same reason why somebody might not be embarrassed to see someone in a swimsuit, but in underwear of comparable coverage would be embarrassed. There's cultural attachment to the concept of underwear.
Yes. while I think that's there's something strange about that, and I know it's true, I can understand it more than I can understand just knowing the brand name of what. I don't understand why that would be creepy.
It's like I'm talking to Starman.
Do you think it's creepy?
I think it's not uncreepy.
What's that supposed to mean? It's not uncreepy. What? So is it creepy or not?
I would feel weirded out if I knew my sister's, what brand of underwear my sister used. There's this implication of then thinking about my sister's underwear in the process.
If there is?
Well, if I have to say saying the sentence, my sister, or even thinking in my head, my sister wears X brand underwear, is impossible to be said without thoughts of your sister's underwear in your head. Like, literally, you can't form those words. I'm not talking mental image or anything. You're just thinking of your sister's underwear. And again, there's a cultural stigma attached to that, even on just a personal level.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Do you know what brand of underwear your sister wears?
No, but I... If I did, it would... To me, it would be just like knowing what brand of anything that she...
So if you knew, you'd just tell us right here, if I asked.
I don't know. I mean, if I wouldn't tell you, it would only be because there's a ton of things that I won't tell someone about somebody else that might be personal or that they might not want people
but
to know.
But that's the thing. Based on your argument, it sounds like you don't think that's particularly personal. Because I certainly don't think if I
no,
said,
what, I'm
what
saying
brand
is,
of car does your sister drive that you would hesitate for a second.
I won't even say the name of the person I live with at home. I mean, which I don't think is a particularly personal thing, but I'm, you know, it's a podcast.
Oh, no, and I appreciate that. And that's an issue of identity. But no, the example I'm just using here. If I asked you what brand, what model of car your sister, or not even model, sorry, what brand of car?
Yeah.
I don't think you'd have a problem telling me that.
I don't know, because I wouldn't know if she would object to me saying that for some reason. What I'm saying is, if I would refuse to offer personal information about someone just based on principle, it could be anything. There's nothing special or privileged about what kind of underwear they wear. It's just, I mean, we're talking about me here, you know, I'm just hyper guy about privacy. It's amazing that I reveal anything about anybody I know, much less myself, that's private. The brand of underwear someone wears isn't any greater personal. I mean, what difference would it make? Let me put it this way. If I was comfortable revealing anything personal about my sister, this would be right up there with anything else I would reveal. I don't see how it would matter. I don't see how she would care if she didn't care about me revealing other personal things about her.
You might want to check with her.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Since I can't, I am going to err on the side of not sharing personal information. But what's so personal about a brand of underwear? There's 100 brands of underwear out there. I mean, it's just, how is it any different than knowing the brand of T-shirt that they like to wear or knowing the...
If you'd like to take a stab at explaining this, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. I'm trying to explain it to William. Last episode, there was a really interesting and very involved conversation about metal music, mostly between jazz and Azure Talent. You should go check out from the last episode. Maybe we'll have an interesting one about underwear.
I mean, there are things I can think of, things of a very intimate personal nature that a person might have brand preferences on that I would feel creepy about knowing about anybody, much less my sister. I don't even want to talk about what they are, but underwear is not one of them. Underwear is not one of them. I don't really understand.
I think a lot of people inherently sexualize underwear.
Oh!
That's not that super different from what I said already, so I'm not sure why it's only just cluing into you now.
Well, intimate doesn't mean sexual. Intimate can just mean, you know, private, or, you know, private isn't always about sex. At least not for me. Lots of things fall in the private realm that don't have anything to do with sex, so sexualizing under, I see what you're saying. I guess. But see, to me, this falls into the same category of, there are a lot of people that don't want to know if someone's gay because they can't help but, like, picture them in bed with someone who's, you know what I'm saying, is like, which is absurd to me because to me that's like, you know, when people find out two people are married, do they, are they like, oh, don't tell me you're married, because they immediately visualize them in bed together?
I always picture that.
Or when they say, oh, this is my child. Oh, don't tell me this is your kid, because I now imagine you having sex when you had this kid. I mean, you don't have to go there.
To me, that, no, you don't have to, but sometimes you can't really choose. And to me, that's fine. In the instance you're talking about, they need to get over it, because it's a social issue. I understand if that's genuinely a thing, that somehow you hear somebody's homosexual and you immediately picture that. You need to learn to deal, because we're not going to have a society where homosexuals don't get to admit it, because some people, maybe even just that one stupid dude, pictures it. Like, sucks to be you, right. But society wins out on this one.
Okay, but the same thing with, I mean, underwear is just clothing. You don't have to sexualize it.
Yes, but I don't think anybody is being unfairly marginalized.
No, I don't think so either. I'm not...
But I want to tell everybody the brand of my underwear.
I'm not saying that. No. I'm saying that...
And I'm saying in the capacity that they're similar, I think they're both valid. The way I think that the other one is not valid.
Right. But this person is asking if it's creepy, and I'm saying, no, it's not creepy. I mean, unless...
Well, it's, I don't the know. Answer is it's only creepy... If it's creepy to you.
Yeah, right. I suppose
because
that's right.
Unless you went to effort to learn, especially if you went to learn it when your sister was attempting to hide this from you.
Or you went through her drawers.
Then it's creepy. Yeah, or if it was accompanied by any obviously creepy act. But beyond that, if you feel creeped out knowing it, then yeah, that's... Yeah. But otherwise... No, you're not a particular creep.
And also, it's not a difficult thing to find out about somebody if, like, you know, you go to the mall with them and they decide, oh, I have to, you know, go buy this. Or if, like, you know, if you're with your sister and she sees, oh, Victoria's Secret, I want to go in here and get some stuff. I mean, she just told the whole store what brand of underwear she bought. So, you know, it's not
And sometimes it depends on the individual.
Deal.
There are people... some of them are blood relations, some of them are relations through marriage, some of them are friends, for whom I really, really wish to avoid ever thinking of them in any sexualized context whatsoever. So, to the degree, the concept, even if and when they're adults and things, that they ever had sex is something I don't even want to think about. Now, again,
sure.
I realize
sure.
this is kind of... And if I have ties to the idea of sexualizing underwear, even just thinking about the concept... I mean, obviously, you don't want to think about them not wearing underwear either, but the concept that they wear underwear is like, oh, I didn't even want that in my head.
Okay.
I actually had that with... not with underwear specifically, but I was... It's funny, and it's a weird... You're not going to understand this, and you're going to say it contradicts itself, and it totally does. But at a certain point, my youngest sister-in-law attempting to sort of, like, set her up with a single guy I knew. I was like, you might like each other.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't do it, and I'm glad, too, because one of the first things he was saying is, well, how's she look? Is she attractive?
Mm-hmm.
And I immediately was like, oh, my God, I don't want to have to even think of the answer to that question.
Oh, yeah, right.
Because I so don't think of her that way and don't want to think of her that way.
Well, yeah, but that's when you just say, okay, well, she's my sister-in-law, so I'm really not...
No.
I can't really answer the question
that way. It wasn't my response, but the fact that... Because I then did, at least for a split second, I was like, huh? Oh, no. I was like, God!
That's... Yeah. See, I wouldn't even... For me, my mental workings would just immediately just come up with a blank, and I'd
yeah.
immediately be able to say...
better mental discipline / paranoid mental reflexes. I feel like any time you're speaking with anybody, your brain is already in a half cringe, just in case.
It probably is, yeah.
I feel that is certain when you're talking to me, and I feel that is probably wise for you. And you should teach more people to do this.
Well, it's just, I would totally come up with a blank, and I would know exactly what to say, which is, I'm the wrong person. You realize this is my sister-in-law. There's no way I can or ever have thought about this person this way. So you're going to have to talk to somebody
else. But here's the thing. I don't feel that's inherently true just because somebody's
your sister. No, you're right about that. You're absolutely right.
Particular one, partially because of the age she is in relation to me and the age she was when I started dating Trish, has very much become my little sister.
Yeah, right. I totally agree that as a human being, I'm perfectly capable of thinking that way, but I've built up so many different partitions in there that it would be very difficult for me mentally to negotiate to that place such that if I'm asked, it doesn't even have a chance to get there.
I have built so many conduits in my brain that even the really careful areas that are terrible for me are wide open. Yeah, and anything can
but
just
I,
jump
I there. Do acknowledge there's no reason for a human being to not be able to do it. And I'm just like any other human being, I could. But like you were saying, all those little disciplines that I put in place make it hard.
And those poor goddamn homophobes don't have those disciplines. And so when they hear somebody's gay, they have... The one I always loved, and it became so problematic, and especially when I studied gender studies later, I understood now why it was a thing. But guys in middle school, high school age, when we would talk about homosexuality, as close to serious as they could, because by and large, the level of homophobia and hate against homosexuality of the average guy that I knew in middle school and high school, like, with the exception of my close circle of friends who were like, that's fine, whatever. But amongst just the guys I would know in school, the average level was, I guess I don't care what they do, but I don't want to know about it because it's gross.
Mm-hmm.
Which, compared to some of the hate out there, is kind of tame. But I would talk about it, I'm like, it doesn't matter to me because I had a friend or whatever, and they'd be like, but aren't you ever worried that if they're hanging around, it varied from they'll hit on you to they'll rub up against you, which was an amazing one.
But they'd assault you.
And I was always like, and this argument follows a logical progression from that, which is to say, if you ever see a girl that you're not interested in, do you worry they're going to do that? And there's where the argument falls apart, because it's a teenage boy, so there's no such thing as a girl they're not interested in. But on top of that, even if we say there is, even if you start drawing some really caricaturous, hugely unattractive female to them, that they're like, oh my god, it's not a concept, socially speaking. Guys don't worry, even if they don't want it, they don't have to worry about girls hitting on them. And somehow a gay dude can then feminize you, and it's like, you're the girl.
Well, that's what people say. They say that homophobia is men worrying about other men treating them the way they treat women.
Yeah, yeah. And it was...
There's some truth to that.
But the realization came to me in pieces, because as I was a kid, I would try and do the arguments, and then I'd be like... You're right, the argument doesn't work. And I know I'm right, but I don't know why I can't explain it to you.
Yeah, right.
Because I was also a teenage boy who was attracted to any female anywhere and could not ever imagine it being a problem if they hit on me. But that was the only argument I could explain it to. But other than, of course not, they're just fucking human beings.
Right.
And so it wasn't until years later that I was like, oh, yeah, now I get it.
Yeah.
But also... I'm fine with that because that's not an argument I could have explained to them.
Yeah.
Or at least not one that would have registered for them.
Right.
All right. The Ezzy has arrived, so you know what that means.
No.
Time to wrap it up.
Oh.
Actually, the two events are unrelated, but they are both true. Ezzy has just arrived, and we are just about out of time.
Okay.
So, go to the blog and tell us what we did wrong and what we did right. And how much you love us. Oh, real quick, gotta mention, give a little shout out here. So you remember how we were... I've actually been really pleased, as much as I hate him and everything he has to say, that Azure Talon is showing up on the blog and all that as proof that he's still listening, because that's cool, because I thought maybe he'd faded away. So that was fun. But no, remember how we wondered if Steve Gerbic from Serbia was still listening, because he kind of sort of disappeared,
mm-hmm.
and we thought that maybe Craig was our only international audience anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Not long ago, I learned that Steve is, in fact, listening, and I learned this because I got a Facebook thing that said, somebody mentioned the Magical Talking Hat, and it was somebody who had linked to one of our YouTube videos, and it was him, Steve Gerbic, and he said in it, I can't go a week without listening to these two guys. And I was like, that's awesome.
Wow, that's
so
nice.
So thank you, Steve, and we are so glad you're still there, and we're so glad all of you are still there.
Yep.
We love our listeners. And we really do think we're down to about six, but we'll keep doing it for you six because we love you guys.
We do.
And we like to hear from you, and we like you to write the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. We like you to share our videos on Facebook. We'd like you to go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and talk to us there. And we like you. So won't you like you? Because we like you. That's a bad argument, because we've established we are a poor judge of character. So, yeah, that's it. And in a weird twist of fate, we will just talk to you guys next week like it's a normal thing.
Yeah.
So now I got to bring peace to the Goatmen. One way or another.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.